Podcast de Tri, Podcast de Tri, Podcast de Tri, Podcast de Tri.
De Tri.
Hey yo, this is Beto Jimenez. Welcome to el Podcast de Tri, English version. Oh my God. Oh my God. Okay, so today, episode 135, my friend Jess Rochaud. She is the media director from KOS Events. She's an ex-pro triathlete. She's a swimmer. She's been all over the place. And currently, she is a coach based in San Diego. So, yeah, episode 135, English edition. El podcast de Tri, or should I say, the podcast de Tri. Take care, people. Bye bye. Okay, perfect. So, Jess, we're going to do a small intro first. So, that's going to come first and then this. So, good morning. How are you doing? Finally, after 3-5 months, we're finally here.
It really took that long?
Yeah. It did.
Is she so busy for us little people?
Honestly, it's our fault. It's our fault. Because Mariana is like, okay, so I have to get my PhD done or participate in this podcast. Or in my case was Beto, I need to just pass the bar or do the podcast. So at the end we were super busy.
Yes.
But we managed to keep the podcast alive. And Jess, I haven't told you, but like we thought a year ago on just leaving the podcast to a side and just not, we were thinking about just stopping it because it's a lot. We don't like, we have our own lives, but mm-hmm. You came along and you like KOS Events truly like, it wasn't not only the investment that you did in Podcast de Tri, it was the fact that you're like, hey, we see value in this. And we were like, okay, let's see what happens and continue with this. So at the end, it's like, thank you for that.
Nice. You kept it alive.
Mm-hmm. You kept it alive indirectly. Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that it made such an impact. That's really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And here in Mexico where like sponsorships are super difficult to get and that people don't want to give a lot of value to what we do. And you were like, okay, we love you. We want to do this. And like, basically you were like fighting for our for us and for us to be a part of your company. So yeah, thank you for that. But yeah. The good thing is like, okay, I first saw Jess and I'm like, okay, like a social media person. Okay. But then after that, I went into your resume. I'm like, wow, like this girl needs
so much
interview.
More.
Yeah. So we're going to start with that. And this is a question that we start every interview with this question. Like, tell us about little Jess, that little girl that went into sports, like your background and your family background in sports.
Yeah, so I started, my first sport ever was soccer, and my parents signed me up for soccer, I think when I was like 3 or 4 years old, and it was actually here in San Diego. My dad was stationed here shortly for some school because he's in the military, and it was a co-ed soccer team. So I think, you know, playing with the boys at a young age, I think really kind of instilled a lot of grit, you know, because mm-hmm. I had to kind of like fight for my spot. So that was like when I first got introduced to sport. And then
play with a lot of Mexicans?
Yes, sir.
I actually don't really like, I don't remember, that.
Okay.
You know, it was more just sport. Yeah, we were just playing. I knew I was really aggressive. My parents gave me the nickname Sandpiper because I was just so fast and all over the place. So soccer was my first, I guess you could say my first love of of sport, and then we moved to Milton, Florida, which started playing soccer there, started getting involved with the water, the ocean, and then shortly after that, we moved to Jacksonville, Florida, which is where I was for 10 years. So I started playing soccer there, and then I got introduced to summer league swimming, which I'm not sure if that is, if you guys have that in Mexico, during the summers, but when school's out, they do like 3 months of swimming at, just like the community pools. And I signed up with a friend, and I ended up getting an award at the end of the swim season for fastest kicker. And I really grasped onto that because I was like, yeah, I'm like a fast kicker. Like, I'm going to be such a good swimmer. And, I think getting the positive feedback from the coaches, and just as a young kid, you really just like grasp onto that. And ever since that, I just kept going with it. And I shortly after that got introduced to bowls. I'm not sure if you're familiar with bowl swimming in Jacksonville, but they produce Olympians.
Yes,
Like
I know of
Caleb
that.
Dressel. You do? Okay, cool. Yeah. Caleb Dressel. Who else? Ryan Murphy. I swam with them.
Wow.
It's just amazing because, the coaches there really instilled like self-belief and confidence. And I give a lot of my, I feel, self-confidence to those coaches, especially Jason Kalinog. He coaches in Texas.
Oh,
He's
really? At
yeah.
which university? You know?
Ooh, I'm what are the two top ones?
UT Austin would be our top one for collegiate sports.
Okay. I forget exactly which school. I know it's one of the top D1 schools. But is
Gotcha.
it the Longhorns?
Maybe the
Maybe is that
Longhorns, yeah. That's UT.
okay, yeah. So he was my
He is for A&M, I think. Yes.
okay, yeah. Yeah, so he our whole I guess team motto every single practice was believe. And he would just keep saying believe, 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 like before a big set, during a big set, we would do a lot of meditation too, at a
How
young
old
age.
were you there?
I
No, kidding.
was 11 when I first started with bowls, and I left when I was 15, because I moved to I wanted to do the athletic, but
Sorry, it broke
I
down like for a few seconds, but okay, yeah, no, let's continue. It was a few seconds only. So you actually was like 20 seconds. So you were 11 when you moved, and then?
Yeah, I was 11 when I initially joined Bulls, and then we moved to Virginia Beach when I was 16, so sophomore in high school. So it was like, middle of high school. That was rough, and my whole social life it was swimming. I was there in the morning, I was there at night. I had my high school friends, but truly, like, swimming and sport was my
Your friend
foundational,
group, yeah.
yeah, like my community and my like safe space almost. Like it was like where I went just to like,
And
put
in
my head
your
in the water and look at the
And in
yeah.
your mind, like, did you had at that age, like 15-year-old, did you want it to just like be a swimmer like all your life? Was that like in your mind, like, or was it only like a hobby? Did you
So
want it to leave from that?
my dad was he was a cyclist. He was also a runner. He was, super active. So I definitely followed in his footsteps of like monkey see, monkey do. Like, and he bought me my first bike when I was 13, and I would go on bike rides with him, and I, just like try to like stay right behind him, and he wouldn't go super fast, but I had to like, work pretty hard to stay with him. And so I started cycling for fun, just purely fun when I was swimming. And then as and I remember in fifth grade, you know, the presidential Ella or what, the presidential P. Okay.
Okay, we're back. Sorry about that. So you were saying that on fifth grade, the presidential something.
Yeah, so do I keep my video off?
Yeah, just keep it off. Yeah, it's gonna be easier.
Yeah, so we did the mile run for time, and I was third overall in the entire class. And I remember, I think that was like kind of not like a pivotal moment for me, but I was just like, whoa, like,
You realize you can run.
yeah, I was like, yeah, I can run, like, I can swim, like, I bike with my dad. And, you know, Mia Hamm was one of my, like, you know, role
Idols,
models
yep.
when I was little. And I remember getting a magazine. It wasn't Mia Hamm on the cover of it, but it was like a triathlete magazine when I was like 13, 14. And I was like, whoa, like I wanna do this. Like, how fun. I get to do like three sports. Like, you know, like I just was so stoked about it. And yeah. And so after that, in the back of my mind, I had an idea that I would want to pursue triathlon. And I just, you know, I was young. I don't really know what that looks like or how that happens. But truly, the thing that drove me to become a swimmer and swim in college was injury. I got so many stress fractures. I didn't really know when to stop. And it was never an external pressure. It was like internal. Like, I just wanted to keep going. My parents really never pushed sport on me, which I think really helped me. It was just all because I wanted to do it. In fact, like, if I didn't go to school or I didn't do my homework, like, I'm not allowed to go to swim practice. Like, it was
Okay.
one of those things. It was like sport wasn't a reward for like doing the things that I needed to do, you know? But I ended up getting back surgery when I was. It was kind of a wild scenario because I felt like a tightness in my left hamstring. And this was when I was in high school. It started when I was like 15. And, you know, we keep up with our stretching, we do all the things. Like, there's no reason why my left hamstring should be so tight and so painful, and my right wasn't. And because I like delved into the studies and physiology and all those things, I was like, this doesn't make sense.
What did it end up being?
I had a bulging disc that was pressing on my sciatic nerve.
Okay.
And they tried all the things. You know, I got steroids, I got cortisone injections, like straight into my spine. At school, like, I had to stand up all day, like with a podium,
Wow.
because it was
That must have been so
so,
hard to go through.
it was brutal. It was like, you know, probably the most brutal time of my life. And I was only 17, and I was swimming on a cord. At this point, I was in Virginia when I got the surgery. I was in Virginia, but I was swimming on a cord attached to a diving board, and my coach would have like a beeper, and it would beep, and I would swim a certain time, and then it'd beep again, just like
You're a
2 hours.
hamster.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's just a workhorse. And yeah, so got surgery. And so from that point, I was like, okay, like, I want to swim in college, I want to get a scholarship, like, I'm just gonna stick with swimming. And so I chose to really just, yeah, do one sport at that point. Yeah, and then I swam in college. I went to Nova Southeastern University in Fort Lauderdale.
Did you got a
And
lot of like offers for colleges, or you wanted that one? You got it.
so
Like,
it was.
was it easy to get the scholarship? Sorry,
Yeah, I
we're back.
wasn't all
Continue,
good.
continue.
I wasn't able to improve my times as a junior, so I had to get recruited with the times I had as a sophomore. So I had dreams of, like, you know, at one point I wanted to go to North Carolina and swim with them. I, like, you know, there was FSU, Florida, a few other schools like that, but I quickly learned that there was absolutely no way I'd be able to get money in a scholarship with the times that I had. So Fort Lauderdale was a new program at that point. I think they'd only been live for one year. So I got recruited. I joined in on the second year of the program, which was cool. It
Yeah,
was
a young team.
yeah, it was cool to kind of like create that legacy and be a part of the beginning. And similar to you, I like wanted to go to school as an athletic trainer, but the requirements for the volunteer hours and like internships and all of
It's a
that just
lot to be an athlete at the same time. Exactly.
it was too much. So I just shifted out of the athletic training path and just did exercise science and actually minored in business as well, which further helped with what I'm doing now. But yeah, I still really enjoyed it. I definitely still have that bug in me to do more with my degree, but yeah.
You're doing amazing things now. So how about, Beth, are you ready to talk about some of that stuff?
But like I want to stay in that path a little bit. So
Go for it.
you were like, okay, I want to focus on my studies and this and that, but at the end you did turn pro and continue in that like athlete path. Like obviously you were like getting into scholarships. You had a scholarship for swimming, so at the end it's like you were an athlete. So just tell us a little bit on how your pro career went. How did you start it? Why did you end it? Like what were you like your top experiences? What were your goals going into your pro career?
As a triathlete, once I like made this one, okay. So when I had a
Because this
really
is El Podcast de Tree, so at the end it's like let's go there.
This is the good part, I guess. so when I was a sophomore, I had a really good season, freshman sophomore year. I specialized in the 1,000 free, 500 free, and the 400 IM. So I kind of knew in the back of my mind that I was like, gonna do more in my athletic career. So when it came to junior year, that's when a lot of collegiate athletes get in touch with the recruitment program for USA developmental team. And I got in touch with Barb Links, who
Tree.
the junior year, I decided to actually quit swimming. And it was really difficult to quit something that I started because it's just not a person, it's just not me. But I also felt strongly about, pursuing triathlon. So I got in touch with Barb Lindquist with USA Triathlon, and she kind of gave me the lowdown of what I needed to do. And a big portion of that was running. And so I got in touch with our cross country team at Nova. And a training program that would help me reach
Yeah, we're good. You can continue.
the goal of the time I needed to. So they have like benchmark times. So as a swimmer, there's a certain run time you have to hit to get on a team. And I don't remember exactly what that time was, but it was fast. It was really fast. And so naturally I just started, following this program, training at home over the summer. And even though the program was, I think it was appropriate, I should say, like for a swimmer to become a runner, but my body just wasn't ready to take on biomechanically, like my glutes weren't firing properly. Like I was overcompensating with my hip flexors, and it was just a really difficult time for my body to go from, low impact swimming to high impact land. And I got a stress fracture in my tibia, and then I had a lot of hip issues. And it would kind of jump back and forth between my right and my left hip. And so I really struggled with adapting to running for a solid like 2.5 years, but I learned so much about my body, and about what it requires, and went to physical therapy, like kind of fell deeper in love with the process of what it takes to become, a high competitive.
Multi-sport.
Yeah, exactly. And so eventually I found success in my running, and then I got back in touch with Barb because I kind of had to take I didn't ha
Time
I
off.
just had to step away from it for a little while, and figure my body out. But got in touch with Barb, and she led me to a team that was training in Carlsbad with his name Jared Evans. He's from Australia. The team name is Triathlon Gold. But a lot of girls and a couple guys were training with him. They were all living together in Carlsbad, and I would commute and go train with them. And he really, really, really helped me with my run. I would say he actually saved my form and my like longevity with the sport. But yeah, I started training with them, and then he invited me to go to Australia, and from Geelong. And so we stayed in Geelong, and we did the 2x U series, which it invites pretty much the top women in Australia who are fighting to do the ITU circuit, which is what I thought I wanted to get on. That's what I was striving for, is like the draft legal ITU. And yeah, so I had a lot of success in that. I didn't win a race there, but I really, really performed well on the swim and the bike, but I always struggled with the run. So in the back of my mind, it was hard to keep up with those D1 runners who could maintain like a 5:15, and I was still in like the 17, 18 range of a 5K. So yeah, that was a challenge. And if I'm being completely honest, the team was difficult. I had a hard time with just like strong women supporting strong women, and like, being okay with someone being better than you. And I just struggled with the atmosphere a
Yeah,
lot.
and did you have a hard time because you were like over there? You weren't like you were American in Australia. Do they look different at you, or that wasn't an issue?
No, that wasn't so much of an issue. I think it was more so like I was like the new talent coming on to the team, and I had a lot of strength in the swim and the bike, even up against the guys on the bike at in some training sessions. And I think it was, I don't know, I just feel like sometimes you find groups that really welcome and support that in a woman and like with other strong women, and then sometimes it just doesn't, mesh very well. And it was just kind of like a catty environment, which is something that in college swimming, like it's a thing that happens with when you have a bunch of girls doing the same thing. But it was hard to be in that and from home. But that's when I kind of started to do other research about Xterra. And I was kind of trying to figure out if I would have success in ITU. Like, am I going to be a good runner? Like, am I going to get fast enough? And at the same time all of this was going on, I have a background in adventure racing, and I've done a lot of multi-sport events, but mostly ocean adventure racing in Tahiti. And I had an event coming up called it was the Waterman Tahiti Tour. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with
I'm
that,
familiar with
but
that.
it's kind of like this gnarly, endurance, more of like a mental challenge. I don't know, it's definitely physical, but like, there are certain things that are like, let's paddle around the entire island of Bora Bora and see how long it takes. Like,
Okay.
there's, yeah.
Wow.
So basically, you transition it from you made a transition from pro triathlon to like from ITU to okay, I want to do with Steras and this kind of stuff. What was your like highlight as a triathlete, pro athlete, like your best race, like the what's what you remember the most as like your happy day? Let's put it that way.
I think the race that stands out the most is the Xterra Morea. That one, because I had just gotten into mountain biking, maybe like 2 3 months worth of training, and the more being in Morea is first just like energetically this super intense, just the spirit and like the energy of the athletes and the people there was amazing, like all experience there. But that race got me a ticket to Maui World Championships later on that year. So I competed in Xterra Morea. I think that was May of 2020 or 2019. And then Maui World Champs was October. So it was like a it was super quick transition. And I knew I was going to be up against, Flora Duffy, which is she's just an incredible athlete, and Leslie
Leslie
Patterson. And
Patterson. We're good friends with Leslie Patterson, actually.
yeah, she's such a special human. I have looked up to her for a very long time. But yeah, it was cool because I knew I was going to be up against these women, and if I had a good race and things went the way I planned, I knew I could, be up there with them.
And how did it went? How, what happened? What happened? I'm super, I
Oh my
want
gosh.
to know.
Yeah, so
Everything went wrong.
yeah, everything
Oh.
went wrong. Everything
Oh.
went wrong. But so and this was in Maui. Actually the swim was good. The swim was good. The waves, I think Maui is known for that beach break, and we actually had like a decent conditions. I would have preferred bigger waves just because I grew up ocean lifeguarding and I thrive in that type of scenario. So I knew if it was bigger, I could definitely, make grounds on a lot of those athletes. But it was decent. This one was good. But I ended up not setting up the proper tires for the mud because it rained the night before. It was dry and everything was perfect. And then it rained, 5 hours before the race. And I wasn't super well versed in mountain bikes and the tires. And my tires were, the treads on them were so deep that in the muddy conditions, it just scoops up all of the mud versus like rolling over it. So I had a really hard time with tires. My bike was super, super heavy. I got a flat. I like went over the handlebars and crushed my ribs. I like ripped my suit
Oh
on a
no.
bridge. Yeah, but the cool thing about it was I had a woman stop and help me, and that is just unheard of in the ITU field. Like that would never happen. Are you kidding me? At a world championship, like no, I thought I was just like out of the race. I didn't think I was gonna be able to finish. And of course there were like a lot of tears involved because I was like, I just got here and just totally ruined this experience. But having that woman stop really, just really helped me gain
See
more
the good,
confidence.
yeah.
Yeah, I was like, wow, like it's so much more than just a race. Like this is more. And I think in that moment I just had this realization that I didn't necessarily like need or want to be the best. I just like wanted the experience, and having that woman stop really helped me come to that realization. But long story short, I ended up finishing the race. It took me, oh gosh, I don't even remember my time, but it took me a really long time. It probably took me like 5.5 hours to finish the race. And yeah, that was my last competitive event as a triathlete. I haven't done a triathlon since.
Okay, and how and then what happened next? Because you stayed in the sport via AOS coach, like how did you manage your gig, your job, and to get your job, and like how did you like continue to be involved in triathlon?
Yeah, so with Cause, actually, rewind a few years in 2018 when I was first getting into the sport, when I was dealing with all those injuries and trying to, prove my ability to get onto the developmental team. I reached out to Cause because I was living in San Diego, and I asked them if I could do some social media posts and do stuff like that in exchange for entries, because it was so expensive. And I was like, as a young triathlete, I was like, I can't spend this much money on an entry. So Carrie, I was speaking with Carrie, and she agreed to it. And so she gave me an entry. I did a bunch of social media posts, and that went on for about a year. And then it slowly just developed into a stronger relationship. They really liked what I did. And so I asked them to come on like part-time, to support, I wanted to continue to work and support myself as I was training, to give me some income. So I did that for a couple years. And then COVID happened, which everything shut down, especially the event companies. And then post-COVID, so this is like 2021, 2022, and that's when I came on full time as their marketing director coordinator. And now I've been with them officially full time for a couple years. And so yeah, the relationship developed over time. So they've kind of seen me, grow as a person and as an athlete, and they know that I can like speak to that audience, which it's really rewarding. I love being involved in like watching other people at the events accomplish goals, and it's nice to still be involved, but in a different way.
Yeah, and a lot of people, like there's a lot of pros that just don't make it in the triathlon world as pros and just like don't want to go into coaching and just like go out completely. But it's super cool that you had the chance like to do that, to stay around the sport doing that. What I point out also is that a lot of people don't do that. Like honestly, like being the marketing director of a big San Diego triathlon based company, we want to like describe it as that. It's like a job that a lot of people would like to have, and at the end it's not that you just got in and hey, I want this job. Like you started as basically an intern working for race entries, and you work yourself up there. That speaks a lot about yourself and what you do. And yeah, but you haven't done one, like when you're like in the expos and so, why don't you just say like, okay, I'm gonna do one once a year, or you're totally
Yeah.
out?
I'm a very like all or nothing person.
Intense. Yeah, all triathletes are like that one.
But I also like come to terms with what truly like I guess what I like truly need in the sense of being active and being in sport. And I am still very active and I do all the things, but I think I have more of like a balance with it. And yeah, I know. I just like I don't have that strong desire to do the sport, and I think a part of that might be a little of my ego being like, you're not gonna be able to go as fast. That might be a little bit of it, but I also really enjoy the adventure racing, and I still am involved in that, and that kind of fills the void of the competitive edge that I crave sometimes. But I actually just had knee surgery 10 weeks ago. So that also has a lot to do with it. I think the wear and tear on my body is kind of just now coming up. I tore my meniscus, my medial meniscus, in several different areas, and it was kind of like a chronic a chronic thing. I wasn't super aware of it until it got really, really bad, which I think is a common thing with meniscus tears. But
Oh my.
I actually injured it initially about 3 years ago when I was
Doing
in
what?
Morea and I was
Oh, okay.
running.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And okay, and now pivoting to that, like the Mexican part of KOS events, like when take us back when you learned that at the end, okay, like you were like, I'm gonna work in KOS events. That's like a company that does races, mainly triathlon races in San Diego, but and I'm gonna be around marketing. So as a marketing director and Mexico is a big part of your marketing and of your like basically participants of your event. Like how did you saw that? What were your reactions? And can you just like speak about that? Because that's something that's pretty awesome actually.
So I think a big part of our staff and our belief in triathlon is just inclusion and making it accessible and desirable for just every single, background and ability level and upbringing. And that's something I think Paz, our whole team, feels really strongly about. And we had a meeting, at the beginning of the year. And I kind of have a reign of taking the marketing where I feel is necessary and important. And I had a conversation with Carrie, and because I'd come across the podcast, I forget initially how I saw the podcast, but I was launching our ambassador program, and I was like, you know what? Like, I think partnering with you guys would be super beneficial because a lot of our insights on our Instagram and on Facebook, our audience is, over 50% for the majority of our outlets, like especially our Grand Fondo Cycling. I think that's like a 70% is
That's
over
something
in
that I
Mexico.
really want to pause and point out. It's like half of the persons that go into triathlon in your event, probably less than that, a little bit more, but even 30%, like in my mind, it's a lot. But that's a reality. Like there's a lot of people that do triathlon from Mexico and go over there, and that baffles me, right?
Yeah, initially I, until I started digging deeper into our audience, I was kind of shocked. I think we were all a little shocked that that was the case, but I think it's super cool because it brings, two communities together. And as you were saying before, like, the upbringing and the opportunities and just like the availability of certain training and facilities, it's just so different. But to see it come together is like a beautiful thing,
And okay, so obviously how after the yeah after COVID, how has the recent year and a half played out? Like numbers, like KOS, is it out like a healthy company? Like are you hitting your marks? Like how's the company and what do you foresee for triathlon, like at least in Southern California and Mexico? It's like it's there, but it hasn't like made a big growth. It almost died after COVID. We're getting there, but it's like yeah, because it's very difficult to make like here the race, like in Mexico the races are very a little bit less expensive, so it's very difficult to make money from them, and it's everything is different, but how does it look over there, like over the last years and going forward?
Yeah, so the thing with, I think the most difficult thing that we've experienced after COVID is, inflation and the prices and the cost of everything has gone up. So I think it's difficult to, come up with a reasonable accessible triathlon entry price when the cost for us to put on the actual event has gone up. So it kind of goes hand in hand. But with that being said, I think looking at our registration reports from like 2019 to today, there isn't that big of a difference in entry. In fact, we're pretty much spot on to where we were in 2019 for most of our events. I would say there are a few events like the Tri Classic coming up in a couple weeks. I think that one is more low than it was in the previous year, but like San Diego International, Mission Bay coming up, it's all tracking really, really well, which I think says a lot about our company and people's desire to, you know, continue to stay involved, which we're really grateful for. But also just like giving the triathletes in Mexico and in San Diego an outlet to race, you know, I think having that still is, I think it just says a lot about one, our community and their desire to race, and two, like the events that we put on, you know, I think it's.
That you're totally on. At the end, it's like the only way that you're gonna like grow, it's like if you give them a good product and people come back. And that's like I see a lot of Mexican races in the way they are organized. And like here, you don't spare any time on making and preparing a save and like good experience. Like if you're going into a KOS event, you're seeing like security all the way, like in the roads. It's gonna be like you're gonna see police officers in every intersections, a lot of cones, like those orange cones. I'm like, where do they get so much cones? Like it's like, okay, so like a lot of money goes into that, and it makes sense. Like a lot of times I have interviewed a lot of race directors, and people think like, oh yeah, it's $200 for the entry. So $200 times X amount of athletes, these people are rich. But at the end, it's like, yeah, but you need to spend a lot of money because at the end, it's like if you're organizing, it's like you're organizing three different races because you're organizing a swim race, then a bike race, and then a run race. And you need to like do a lot of things that go behind that. And like with our audience, we like shown on our audience like behind the scenes on what goes into creating and organizing and being liable for this type of races. So at the end it's like, yeah, great job, the numbers are there, and it's a good thing that we love to be to we think that we have been a good, like we have helped at least to grow the Mexican community. And because we're based here in TJ and in San Diego, it's like, hey, come over here because you're coming home. So yeah, like nothing bad to say about, I love KOS events, I love what you do. And yeah, I think we hit all the marks. Do you want to say something else? Is there something else missing? I don't think so.
No, I feel like, yeah, I feel like that was super good. I can't think of anything.
Yeah, I'm gonna repeat it the way I see it. There's like a lot of people in your, like, this is different because we usually do Spanish podcasts and people in Mexico listen to us. So at the end, it's like, or in the US, we have like 25% of our audience is in the US. They speak English, obviously, but something that we say a lot and to the people that hear us for the first time, it's like, okay, why do you have so much Mexicans in your races or Spanish speaking persons? Number one is that it's so easy if you're from Mexico to travel to San Diego. You travel to TJ, and from the airport, you just cross the border walking. There's a bridge, and you're in San Diego. So you can go ahead and make a weekend out of it and go to Disney and then go do the triathlon. A lot of people do it for the Rock and Roll San Diego. At the end, you have the Coronado half marathon that you start in Coronado and run all the way to the beach. Like, you have like, there's no reason not to do that. And if you want to go ahead and race in the United States, it's the more easiest, less stressful way to do it is to come to San Diego and do a triathlon. So San Diego sells itself. That's something that you have in your favor. Not a lot of places in the U.S. do. So yeah, it's an invitation for everybody to come over from Mexico or from the United States. Okay, so I think that's all. Just, oh man, finally. How was
Yeah,
it?
yeah.
Did you like that? Okay, I think my English is there. You do
Yeah,
understand me,
no,
right?
it's great. Yeah, I had no issue. It's really great. Yeah.
It's probably my insecurity. Okay, so yeah, Jess, so again, on behalf of me, Beto, all the staff of the podcast, we really want to thank you for leading the project, and yeah, hopefully we'll interview again, and we'll meet again. Okay.
Yeah, okay, yeah, thank you so much. That was fun.
Okay, take care. Bye bye,
Okay.
Jess. Okay, I know we said bye, but we're gonna go back because we left one thing out. If you heard the interview all the way up to here or to right now, that means that you're a Jess fan like I am and all the so at the end there's something a very big issue that we left out that Jess is fun. And if you like what you hear, if you like the type of human being that she is, you can go ahead and reach out and she can coach you. At the end, Jess, I'm gonna leave it up to you to explain this part, something that we say here in El Bote de Tri, that okay, the perfect coach does not exist. The best coach is the one that you need in one specific moment on your time. Like a lot of people need a local coach to go and ride on local rides and be around other triathletes, the newbie, a lot of pros or people that are like very serious with sports probably need to train alone and do it differently. So just tell us about your triathlon club. What types of athletes do you want? Do you have all range of them? Just go ahead and tell us what you want about that.
Yeah, so I just launched my coaching business. I think it was sparked because I had a friend who I used to coach in swimming. She asked me to coach her in triathlon, and I was like, you know what? Like, this is a passion of mine. I still love the sport. I'm still involved. And so she sparked my initial approach to coach. Right now, I am wanting to coach any ability level, any person. Anyone who's doing multi-sport, it could be like the swim run or the swim bike. It doesn't necessarily have to be the full triathlon, but I definitely emphasize, like the injury prevention, the strength training. I'm super high on the biomechanics of it, breaking everything down so you're super efficient and powerful. I do have a website. It's called sdtrygirlgang.com. And you can go there and set up a connect call with me, and we can talk about your goals and what you're looking to do. And just overall, like a longevity and lifestyle approach is what I
Injury
emphasize.
free, an injury free. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, injury free is most important.
Okay, yeah, okay, yeah. And we don't have, like in Mexico, we don't have a lot of a very good female male coach ratio. Like, there's not a lot of female coaches in San Diego. In the United States, you see a lot of like more of them. So at the end, it's like hopefully you're gonna get a few Mexicans like just inquire your way, hopefully. So
I would love that so much.
okay, so take care, Jess. That will be all now. And yeah, something else?
Nope, that is it.
Okay, thank you, Jess. Bye bye.
Okay.